All right, everyone, thank you so much for being on the call today. This is going to be a really quick training, and then, if you guys have a bunch of questions, we can knock them out really quickly. You guys may even have some more bullet points to bring up that I didn't, so that'd be great to share with the whole team. The training call today is just going to focus on reasons why your borrower client is not bankable. And a lot of times you will go to networking events, meet people face to face, rehabbers, real estate investors, and you'll just start hearing stories from people, things that have happened to them in this business. But there's a lot of things, a lot of hard lessons over the years that I've learned already on why someone's not going to be bankable or why it's not going to work out. So if I ever catch someone in that situation, I like to let them know ahead of time, this is probably not going to be a bank deal. But we focus on secondary market lending. It can help you over here if your bank says no. So always try to give them a heads up. Before we get into the bullet points, though, I just want to point out that is what we do here. We solve people's problems. So if you ever come across a borrower that does not have a financing problem, their current lender's amazing, that's not a client for us. We have to be able to solve someone's problem, or they have to have a problem for us to solve, really, in order for them to want to become one of our clients. So just please keep that in mind. If you hear someone has an issue, that's not a bad thing. We can solve their problem. That's how we make money, depending on what the problem is. So let's go over some of the bullet points and things that we can solve, and would be good for good ways to pick up clients here. So one major reason why a borrower is not going to be bankable is if they're just not filing tax returns. Honestly, I this happens a lot. Sometimes people go through things in their life, and just for whatever reason, they're not filing their taxes. They're not able to. They're behind on their taxes. We work with lenders that don't request tax returns and never even check up to see if the borrower ever filed. So, if you get a client in that situation, and our clients here are your small business owner, really, so you're going to run into a lot of people out there that are in this situation. They may be a little, I don't want to say embarrassed, but sometimes people are a little bit embarrassed to kind of tell you these things. But I always tell them, this is the type of clients we specialize in here. If you have a tax lien IRS issue, you're not filing taxes, that's fine. We just need to know exactly what the problem is so we can go to the right lender, because out of all the lenders we work with, not all of them have the same underwriting requirements. So I need to know up front, we need to know what is the actual issue to make sure we're going to the right lender. But you ever hear someone say, I'm just not filing tax returns, I don't have any tax returns? Or sometimes people will just say, I can't provide tax returns. That's kind of a nice way of saying, I haven't been filing for how many years, whatever the story is, I can't provide these. Not a problem. We work with lenders that don't have an issue with that, and again, never even check up to see if they're filing. You will also have borrowers say, I don't have any documented income. Maybe they're self-employed, and besides not filing taxes, maybe they are filing taxes. But if you're self-employed, if you first start off being self-employed, maybe you had a job for 20 years, whatever the story is, and now you're self-employed. You would think maybe that would be a good thing. Oh, this person's worked that hard for 20 years to the point where now they can work on their own at their leisure when they want to, take up their own thing, start their own business. Banks actually don't like that. They don't like to see people go from steady jobs to something else. That's kind of a scare for banks. And they really don't like if you can't document your income. If you can't document your income, then there's no such thing as getting a bank loan. And a lot of people that are self-employed have a hard time documenting their income. Maybe they're not a registered employee of their company yet. They don't have themselves on W-2. They pay themselves what they can when the company makes money. So we love self-employed borrowers. I can tell you most of our borrowers here are self-employed. They're fix and flippers, they're real estate investors, from all different levels. Maybe someone just starting off on their first deal, or maybe someone that has a lot of experience as a real estate investor and owns a lot of different properties. But, again, they just don't want to have to deal with going through the bank process, or maybe it's not working for them. Another thing banks don't like is if someone's business entity is less than 2 years old, this kind of goes back to the documented income thing, but But banks really like seasoned entities. So an entity to have been in business for a time and be to producing some income for them to want to lend to that entity. So that often becomes an issue with banks. I hear borrowers tell me that a lot. That's not a problem with our lenders at all. Our lenders, you know, they don't care. There's really no seasoning for any of the entities at all that we close in for what the clients tell us that they want to close in. And just so everyone's aware, I mean, a lot of fix and flippers, a lot of real estate investors we work with, they create a new entity per deal. Not a problem. Our lenders have no problem with that. As long as the entity documents are formed, they could be 5 days old. It doesn't matter. As long as they're fully formed and all in order to make sense prior to closing, and that person can obviously prove that they're a member of that company, which the operating agreement or bylaws would state that, we're good. That we're good to go. Just want to write something down. Give me an idea. Okay. All right. Next bullet point. Another thing that comes up a lot as well, and a lot of people don't understand this sometimes, but we talk about in commercial lending, does the property debt service or not? You know, you don't need to wrap your head around how that's calculated. It doesn't matter. We just get the intake information. The lenders will tell us if it debt services or not. Obviously, there's no such thing as a debt service coverage ratio on a ground-up construction loan or a rehab loan because the property is not producing income. It has the potential to produce this type of income, so that's what those loans are based off of. But a lot of times you'll get a property and it doesn't debt service, meaning the expenses on the property are actually a little higher than the income that the property is making, and that's not good. That means the property is not able to pay the mortgage, or maybe the income on the property is the same as the expenses, and for whatever reason, this person still wants to hold on to this property, but it's just the property itself is not debt servicing. So that happens to us actually a lot. A lot on I would say the 1 to 4 unit investment properties on the permanent rental programs. Banks always overcalculate everything. They'll always want your 3 years of tax returns or personal business. Of course, all the income expense reports on the property for the past 2 years. They're always going to want everything. So not only do they want that property itself to debt service, but they're going to want to do like a global debt service coverage ratio to make sure that all pans out as well. We actually have lenders that on the 1 to 4 unit investment properties, the property doesn't have to debt service. So they don't even collect income and expense reports. They typically just lend you 70% of whatever the property appraises at. A bank would never do that. Everything would be calculated a million times to make sure everything checks out 10 more times before they would lend. So that's going to happen. And just so you guys know, whenever we get all these questions we ask on these intake forms, if we see these things on the intake form, obviously we can calculate the debt service coverage ratio based on the income and expenses on the permanent short form. So when we see something doesn't debt service, or we see, you know, maybe someone's wrote on the form, they're not filing taxes, we can solve these issues, but this is your time to, as a broker, this is where, instead of asking 2 points, we should ask maybe 4, because they're in a situation where it's going to be hard for them to get this loan placed because they're clearly not bankable, and there's only certain lenders out there that do these things anyways, and we know who they are. So that's where you get your fee. When you're really solving someone's problem, that's where you get it. But yeah, if your property does not debt service, again, there's only a couple of lenders out there that do that, commercial lenders, but we work with them. So that's a great time where you can almost cheat the system. You can drastically get someone a much higher loan amount on those programs than they would qualify for if the lender was running a debt service coverage ratio. And because you can get them that much, much higher loan amount, that much higher cash out, you've earned your fee. So that's kind of how we sell it to people. Next bullet point, I would say cash out. A lot of our borrowers own properties and want cash out. They have equity in them. There are a couple banks out there that people have told me, yeah, my bank will do cash out. But in general, I would say, banks don't really just like to give people what they call walking money. And we've actually done lender calls with banks in the past where we've asked them if they do cash out. Like real banks, I mean brick and mortar banks that actually have physical locations, not just like an internet bank. And they have told us no, they would never consider that. They kind of termed that as walking money. They need to know exactly what the money's going towards at closing. A lot of times we get real estate investors in the situation where they just get into a hot market. There's all these properties around them that they could buy, and they can't. We know they want cash out to buy another investment property, but they can't actually give us the address yet because they're not sure which one's going to come up that they're going to win the bid on. That so then they're in a situation where, you know, they might go to their bank, say, hey, I have equity in this property, I'm looking to buy another one. The bank might say, hey, that's great. We could help you with that, but we need to know exactly what you're using this money for. We're not just going to give you cash to walk with and you do whatever you want with it. But, you know, if they're in a situation where they can't identify the property, you know, even if the bank does do cash out, which most banks don't, but even if they're going to, if they can't identify the property, it still may not work for the bank. We can help them. We do cash out transactions all the time. And the borrower does have to write up a letter of explanation, date and sign it, what they intend to use the money for. But, you know, no, after the deal closes, you know, the lender never checks up with them or verifies with them that's what they actually use the money for. So it's really kind of that simple. You know, you are going to have to write a letter of explanation that makes sense. It does have to be a business use. Can't really be a personal use. But, you know, no one's really checking up with them to make sure that's actually what they use the money for. So cash out's a big one. Whenever someone tells me they want cash out, I've heard horror stories from borrowers whose banks have told them they would do the cash out and then like 2 days before closing canceled the loan after they paid for an appraisal, environmental, survey, all these things that they were required to pay for up front, which is kind of very bankish. Banks like a lot of reports done on properties. Our lenders really, I mean, most of our lenders just want an appraisal done on the property. If it is a property that may use chemicals or something like that there, then yes, a lot of times they will ask for an environmental as well. We really don't work too many deals where environmentals need to be done. Typically, it's just the only thing they're paying for up front is the appraisal. That's it. Speed is another one. I have done a couple loans with banks in the past, and getting them kind of to respond to things and to finally get to a closing and to kind of get involved in the transaction was just kind of like pulling teeth. You know, real banks have other things to do besides loans. They have checking accounts, they have customers, they have all kinds of other things they do besides loans. So if you're trying to get a loan done with the bank, it's not a, I'm just talking purely about a commercial loan. I don't know about residential loans because I've never done residential loans. But it's a little nerve-wracking because they're focused on so many other things that they're not purely focused on closing your deal. So I wouldn't say banks are known for speed, and a lot of our borrowers need to close quick. You know, they need to close a rehab deal. They might need to close in 2 weeks. That's never going to happen with a bank. A bank is definitely a good 60 days when it comes to a commercial loan. Every bank loan I've ever done, I've only done a handful of them, took more like 90, and that was with someone, you know, checking in with them every other day. Hey, you know, can you confirm you received these documents? Can you confirm that you got the title company's email? Is the insurance acceptable to you? That's with someone egging them along every couple of days and checking in. It was still a 90-day process. So most of our borrowers that come to us here, they've been through that. They don't have time for all that. They get these good deals. You know, they need to move on them quick. Speed is a huge thing. Banks are not known for speed. Every once in a while, you're going to get that person that has a great relationship with their bank. Their bank does everything they need. Speed, whatever, cash out, that's not a client for us. We don't have a problem to solve for them. But I can tell you 9 out of 10 people are not going to have that banking relationship. Going back to property doesn't debt service, another thing that will happen to you sometimes is that you will get a real estate investor that is very, very accomplished, has great tax returns, personal and business tax returns, has the bio, has everything, but maybe they also want to buy a property that, and I know we kind of touched on this, but I just want to touch on it again. They might want to buy, you know, say a 5-unit strip center and only half the units are rented out, or 6-unit strip center and only half the units are rented out. So the property itself could even be a really, really nice property. Just again, kind of going back to that debt service thing, Sometimes clients don't understand that not only do when you're going for a bank loan, do you have to have the tax returns, the great FICO, all that great stuff, but also the property has to basically be fully rented out as well. So I've been in situations with clients where I've had to explain to them, hey, I know you, you know, on your tax returns, it proves that you can clearly afford this new mortgage, but the property does not debt service itself. So really at that point, you have to put the bar on a bridge loan until that property is more towards at least, you know, I would say, well, I mean, you know, banks really want things fully rented out and long-term leases with clients as well. That's another thing actually that we're able to solve for borrowers as well. A lot of times, a lot of our borrowers, they have tenants that are month to month. You know, they don't have very long leases with their tenants, and a lot of landlords prefer that because if it's not working out between them and the tenant, they can, I don't want to say get rid of them, but they can quickly replace them with another tenant. So I get into these situations with our real estate investors, our borrowers, where, you know, we're dealing with a lot of month-to-month leases. And I've had several borrowers tell me they can't get a loan through their bank because they don't do two-year leases and the bank wants two-year leases. Again, another issue we're solving. Our rental lenders really don't mind month-to-month leases. They do want at least some type of paper stating that they have a month-to-month arrangement. It's not just like a word-of-mouth thing. We actually do have to have a piece of paper saying, hey, this is month-to-month between the landlord, the tenant, what's being paid. But that is another thing that we can solve for people. So on to a couple other things. We do have a lot of clients that do have maybe a tax lien on the property, an IRS lien. Maybe they had a past bankruptcy or foreclosure or home modification. Most of our lenders, when it comes to the BKs, foreclosures, home modification thing, they'd like those issues to be behind them for 2 years. Banks are typically more stricter on that. They want really those issues to be behind you for at least a good five. I've even had banks tell me as I was shopping loans for people to see, you know, if I could get them a bank loan. I had a client once that you know, was in a situation like that, and they wanted it behind them for 7 years. So every bank is going to have their different take on that, but I can tell you most banks want that behind them for probably a good 7 years, any type of BK foreclosure, home modification. 7 years is a really long time, you know, to have that. Your life could change a lot in 7 years. So that can be difficult when you have someone who's had a BK foreclosure, home modification. If it's been behind them for at least 2 years, we can definitely get them into something permanent. If it's less than 2 years, it still does need to be taken care of. It needs, obviously, that issue needs to be solved and done. We could certainly put them in a hard money loan. We may even be able to get them into something permanent. Just it really depends on the severity of the issue. But you're going to run into clients out there, real estate investors, small business owners, that something happened in their life. Obviously, 08 happened to everyone, a lot of people out there. So I'm pretty sure a lot of the banks have gotten over that because there was a lot of people that had, you know, foreclosure or maybe even a bankruptcy to prevent that in 08. But you may run into a bank that's still not over it. So another issue that comes up is a lot of our clients do have tax liens and sometimes an IRS lien or anything like that. And our lenders are actually okay with all those things as long as those issues are solved at closing. They do need to be solved at closing. So if it's a refi cash out transaction, no big deal because the cash out, you know, and this is usually part of the letter, the cash out is going to solve that issue. It will be paid off at closing. If it's a purchase, they're going to have to still solve that issue at closing. All of our lenders have that requirement, all lenders in general. So just one thing with banks, though, is banks are not very fond of that. You know, if you happen to have a note with a bank, a mortgage with a bank, and you somehow get into a situation where there's a lien put against your property, I've had clients in situations where the bank has contacted them and told them, you need to refinance and you have 30 days. You know, according to our mortgage documents, you were never supposed to have another lien against this property besides our mortgage. You violated a part of the mortgage. You need to refinance. And depending on the bank, some banks can be very, very strict about it and kind of threatening to people as well. So people, you know, when they call us, they're nervous. You know, I have to get this done. They're kind of willing to do whatever they have to do to get it done. You know, once one bank wants someone's mortgage off their books, not really, other banks aren't really going to come in and try to refinance that. They're going to figure out what happened. It's really kind of where they've unbanked themselves. You know, you're going to have to go into a permanent loan in the subprime market, which is really the lenders we work with. Interest rate's not going to be a bank interest rate, but it is what it is. You know, you're going to get that IRS tax lien solved at closing, pay off the current lender, and we're good to go. So you're going to run into a lot of people that are in that situation. And sometimes I've had clients where maybe a lien against their property, it's a very long backstory and it makes sense, but it wasn't sometimes even, I don't want to say technically their fault. I had a client before once that was sending in their property taxes to pay every single time they were due, and just for some reason, the office they were sending them into like didn't process the payments for a year or so, and put this very large lien against their property. Their bank freaked out, but it wasn't even really the borrower's fault. Whatever municipality they were sending in their payments to just wasn't making sure they were properly registered against their properties. It was a whole story. But anyways, their bank still wanted them to refinance, even though it wasn't their fault. So you just get into these crazy situations with banks. Another one I recently was in earlier this year was I was working with a woman that had a strip mall, like a retail strip center. A lot of tenants in there. There was like 20 tenants, all great tenants paying rent. The payoff lender was Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo was the current lender. Property was beautiful. It was a beautiful strip center. And she had one tenant in there that happened to sell, it was like a smoke shop, and they sold basically paraphernalia and stuff like that. And they've been there. They've been a tenant there for some years. It's not like they were just a new tenant, but for whatever reason, you know, they told her the end of last year, we want you to get your loan off our books. We want you to go refinance somewhere else. And they came very, very hard at her, and it was due to her having this one tenant that was a tenant for years. So I thought it was such a silly thing to be in. I didn't understand. You know, you have a great paying customer here. You know, it's a really nice strip center. It's not like it's an ugly property or anything, or anything's wrong with the property. It's a beautiful property. But for whatever reason, Wells Fargo wanted her loan off their books, and they literally gave her like 45 days, and that's a very tight timeline when you're dealing with a large commercial appraisal like that. It's going to take the appraiser some time to get that back to us. So she was in a situation, you know, we hooked her up with one of our bank alternate stated lenders, got everything in, got it closed to her in time. But, you know, they certainly put the pressure over her over, I felt, a very, very silly issue, but we got a loan out of that. So on to the next point. Sometimes you are going to run into borrowers that may have some ethical issues in their past or criminal charges in their past. Banks are very, very big on, they always ask for a bio, resume, and our lenders do too. But banks are just kind of very big on appearance as well and who they lend money to. So that may not work for them. We don't actually ask on our intake form, just so everyone's aware, have you ever been charged of a felony? Or we don't ask that on our intake form. We used to years ago, but it started getting a little bit too invasive of a question. As we go through the processing, if I know it's a lender that runs a background check, because not all of our lenders run background checks, just so everyone's aware. A decent amount of our lenders do. Some of our lenders just don't. I don't know why. It's just part of their underwriting requirements. But I do let people know going into a loan, depending on who their file is placed with, just before they're about to pay for an appraisal, I always call them and let them know, hey, this is how this lender works. They're processing underwriting. Just so you're aware, the lender will run a background on you. And here's the things they're concerned about. Anything else, not a big deal. But I do let people know that, because the lender won't bring that up until you're already in underwriting, until a loan's about to close. And at that point, they've already paid for an appraisal, so they're already in it. They're sending us a ton of docs. So I always just have a little combo with them real quick and kind of go over that. I've ran into borrowers where, you know, they've had some things happen in their past. I mean, whenever someone has a financial crime, that's never a good thing, no matter how long ago it is. you know, if it's check fraud or wire fraud or whatever the financial crime is, that starts getting a little bit more difficult. But some of our lenders, even if they do run a background check, they only go back a certain amount of years. So you just have to really pay attention to what the borrower is telling you, what the lender's underwriting requirements are, and figure out where can we get this done where we're not going to have any issues in underwriting, because underwriters love to pop up with all kinds of issues before a loan's about to close. So the intake is so important that we get the right information so we place it with the right lender. Another reason your borrower may tell you they're not bankable is, you know, maybe their FICO is a little lower. You know, banks are really looking for 680 or higher. On the permanent financing, our lenders would really like 660 or higher. We have some lenders that do go down to 650. It's just, you know, this is all like bank dependent. Some banks are very strict on FICO scores, want them to be very high. I could tell you most banks are typically looking for 680 or higher. Sometimes they will do loans for someone who's 660, but sometimes borrowers are denied just because their FICO is a little lower. And most, you know, with banks, you can't just like add someone to your entity you can't always do that with banks. With some of our lenders, they will allow that. They allow a borrower to add someone to their entity and can go off of their FICO. Some of other lenders don't allow that at all. But sometimes that is a reason someone's denied. We did speak a little bit about speed earlier. So, you know, for all your rehabbers out there, you know, speed is everything, especially if they're buying properties from an auction. Obviously, that auction has to allow a mortgage, because even a rehab loan is still a mortgage against the property. But, you know, most rehabbers need to close in 2 weeks, some even 10 days. So, you know, banks are not known for doing rehab deals. We have done a lender call with one bank actually out of the Baltimore, Maryland area that is trying to kind of get into the rehab financing, but it's still not their main thing. Banks in general are not known for doing rehab deals, fix and flip deals. That's not really their thing. I'm sure there is a bank out there that has given someone a line of credit and they're able to use the money for that, a very experienced flipper, but it's not what they're known for. So again, as you guys are out there, you know, you go on meetup.com, you find a real estate event out there, you're going to meet a ton of fix and flippers. Everybody wants to fix and flip a property. And if that's what they're looking to do, eventually they will catch on, they have to go hard money. That's just how it's done. Some people who, you know, might be shocked by a 10 to 12% interest rate, interest-only loan and points, but that is how rehab lending works. And the secondary market is really the dominant of that. Banks are not known for that. So again, that just ties into speed. If you ever have a rehabber who says they're going to go get a loan from their bank, wow, good luck. You know, I don't really think it's going to work out. But if they can get a rehab loan from their bank, all the power to them. Just a couple more bullet points, and then we'll open up for questions. Documentation, kind of a loose bullet point, but you know, some clients we work with. Well, I just want to say, a lot of lenders we work with, they're not requesting as much documentation as a bank is going to request. Banks want everything. And that's another reason we try to kind of stay away from bank loans, is because the more documents, obviously, the lender needs, the longer it's going to take the borrower to provide them to us, the longer it's going to take the loan to close. So our lenders typically, you know, they don't usually want as much documentation as a bank does. So you might run into a client out there that, you know, just doesn't want to go through a very large documentation process. And that's why they not that they're not bankable, they just don't want to go through it. I've had a lot of people tell me that, you're not referring me to a bank, are you? I'm like, no, it's okay. We always tell them the documents that lender needs. Once they agree to the quote, we always tell them the documents this lender needs right away before they even sign a fee agreement, so they're very aware. We do have a couple lenders actually that do ask for tax returns, but that is just because they want to see if the borrower is filing with the IRS. They just want to make sure they don't have an IRS issue or anything. They don't underwrite off them, just so everyone's aware. If you ever see a stip list here that includes tax returns, they just want to see that the borrower is filing. They don't care what they're claiming on their tax returns. They're not underwriting off tax returns. Now, if we are involved in a bank loan, and if we are involved in a bank loan, we try to keep the loan amounts $1 million or more, just because those are loan amounts that are easier to get banks to pay attention to, and to get those much better, crazy 4% interest rates you see on marketing materials and stuff out there from lenders. Then if we're requesting tax returns, they most certainly will underwrite off a tax return. Any type of SBA lender, also a bank loan, they're 100% underwriting off a tax return. But for the most part, we don't really do a lot of bank loans here. We target people that are not bankable, because that's where you can earn your fee. You can solve their issue, which also earns your fee. Those loans close quicker. You can make more money. It's just the way to go in the business if you're a broker. One other bullet point I wanted to bring up, and I think we kind of, credit partners. That was the last thing I wanted to bring up. So we kind of talked about credit a little bit. When you're going for a bank transaction, you know, the bank is going to basically underwrite everyone that is a part of the entity. Definitely if you're over 20%, they'll underwrite you. But I was involved at a bank transaction years ago where everyone that was a 10% owner of the company or more was also underwritten. So, you know, if you have one partner in the entity that maybe their FICO is high 500s because they went through a divorce and nobody decided to pay the home mortgage and it's wrecked both people's credits now, that also affects all the other partners on the transaction. The bank may decide not to do the loan just because that one person is part of that entity. So I've heard a lot of horror stories about this. You know, we've got five partners with all amazing credit. One of our partners had something happens in life that is common, and you know, the bank doesn't want to do the loan. So we can solve that issue because we, our lenders, you know, if this person just wrote up a letter of explanation, it made sense as to what happened, but you have other very strong partners in the entity, our lenders would let that slide. They would let that go. Again, they're not providing bank rates and terms, but we are solving their issue and getting it done. Most lenders in our permanent like bank alternate section, most of those loans are going to be, well, they're all 30-year amortizations. Fixed interest rates are a little different, but the interest rates are around 8%. That's just where they are, more like a little north of that these days as well. But those are just the main reasons that I have ran into over the years why someone's not bankable. So when you hear people talking to you about these key things, again, I always tell borrowers, go to your bank. You know, if they can give you a quick yes or no, that's great. Banks are not really known for a quick yes or no either. And usually the person that you're dealing with submitting your documentation is not the one that's actually going to approve the loan or that works with the loan committee. So there's that gap there in communication. But if they can't do it, we can certainly get it done in the secondary market for them. So let's just unmute and see if anyone has any questions. All right, guys, I know that training is pretty basic and straightforward, but I just wanted to go over that because, you know, as you're out there networking with people, talking to people on the phone, you're going to start hearing all these things that are people going through in their life. And you'll know this is not something a bank does. And there's a lot of times that I have to tell people on the phone, you know, this is probably going to become an issue from your bank. You know, have they said anything to you yet? Oh, no, they haven't said anything. And I said, well, if I were you, I would just hit it on the head, make sure you check with your loan officer to make sure this isn't going to become an issue in underwriting. And if it is, which I already know it's going to become an issue, let us know. We can get it done over here. I'll explain how we can get it done over here. So does anyone have any questions about the training at all? Okay. Anything maybe that borrowers are mentioning to you or anything that you're not sure how to answer, I can also go over some of those questions if anyone has them.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
What I've been coming across a lot is quite a few inexperienced borrowers looking to team up with experienced investors. Uh-huh. My question is, is a joint venture agreement enough, or do they actually need to form an LLC in order to get financing together?
That's a great question. Just so everyone on the phone's aware, every commercial loan, the lender's only going to close in one entity. So they have to actually form a company together and become 50-50 partners or whatever they're going to want to do, because, again, the loan's only going to be made out to one entity.
Okay, great. I assumed that, but I wanted to know.
Yeah, yeah. So you would want them both to be a part of that entity, unless for some reason someone wants to stay off the loan, like maybe they just have a – maybe they have like a tax lien or IRS issue or something where they can't solve it prior to closing, you know, and they actually would want to stay off it because they don't want title to run any reports or anything on them. Then they could, you know, close in the entity who has the credit partner that doesn't have any tax liens or IRS issues, but maybe they have their own private agreement on the side, you know. But I've had clients come to me like that in the past too, where they're partnering with someone and they're sending me like two different sets of entity documents. They're like, oh, we're going to partner on this. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. But the lender's only going to close in one entity, so you two have to figure out what entity it's going to be. Or if you both want to be part of the transaction, that's great. You just have to form a new entity. Just to kind of go over it again, our lenders don't really have any seasoning requirement on the entities being formed. So you could just suggest to them, why don't you just start a new entity? All you got to do is file with the state and you know, the IRS for an EIN document, which you can get on the spot. An operating agreement can be created very quickly and signed as well. And, again, mm-hmm. as long as that's all formed prior to closing, there's no seasoning on the entity. So if someone tries to say, well, we're not sure how to, you know, we don't want to move forward because we have to figure out what entity, you know, they don't really have to figure that out now. They just have to figure out prior to closing.
Okay, great to know. Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course. Does anyone else have any other questions at all? All right, ladies and gentlemen, I know that was a quick one. The bullet points are pretty much straightforward. I will send out the training call to everyone, and if you think of anything that you have questions about that you didn't think of now, just please send it in the loans. We'll get your questions answered. Thank you, everyone, for being on the call.